the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. The basketball season has begun. How about that? And boy, did it begin with the Champions Classic. And we saw number one Kansas with a little bit of a grinder down the stretch against Michigan State. And then we saw Duke absolutely dismantle Kentucky. Big Blue Nation, please, sharp objects, put them away. It's a long season. You'll be just fine. And also, we had a chance to kind of actually get up close and in person with my man Dan Dokic, who actually called his son's first game as an assistant coach at Ohio State. D-Squared, how is life?
Life is great. Are you kidding me? I'm on with you, Gabe, the producer. It's a wonderful day. And you know what? Indianapolis, the other day, Seth, was buzzing, man. And you mentioned it, the Big Blue Nation. Seth, I was downtown around 11, do my radio show at noon, and the Big Blue Nation was everywhere downtown. And by the end of the night, they had the true story. Cut off beer sales in Banker's Life because there were too many fist fights in the concourse, most of which involved the Big Blue Nation because they were getting spanked by the Dukies. Seth, your thoughts. Reddish, Williamson, and Barrett. And Jones. Let's not forget Jones. He's not bad either, the freshman for Duke, Sethy.
I thought Jones. Here's the thing. Everyone loses their mind on Zion Williamson. It's easy. The guy's a mountain masquerading as a man. He's like a bigger version of Charles Barkley. He rebounds the ball. That pass he made in transition to Barrett was absolutely sick. He does things we haven't seen. He's so unique. R.J. Barrett, a little DeMar DeRozan type game, his ability to get to the rim, slash, but he knocked down like his first three threes. Great. Cam Reddish, more of a spot-up guy to me, but he was terrific. But the guy that puts it all together, two things no one's talking about, in my opinion. Trey Jones, 7 assists, 0 turnovers, initiated offense, great ball pressure at the point of attack, defended and disruptive, and then Duke's defense. Now, last year they were ook. They were Duke without the D. The other night against Kentucky, I thought their ability to pressure, deny, push Kentucky out, speed them up, make them settle, get deflections, get them out in transition. To me, Kentucky, the first 10 minutes of the game, totally were reacting to the Duke defense. And no one's really talking about just how good their defense was, because I actually thought it was really good. And disruptive and kind of took Kentucky out of anything they wanted to do. And yeah, they were terrific. It's one game. You can't overreact to one game. But those are some interesting pieces.
I can overreact to one game because I thought.
Yeah, you're on radio 3 hours a day.
Hey, I did talk about their defense. I did think their defense was incredible. And let's go back to a couple of things, Seth. You know, a guy hits his first three threes in that environment. Like, that was a big-time Kentucky crowd. And it just shows how polished young guys are, right? I mean, there was phasing. Yeah, no, there was no phasing Jones. There was no phasing Reddish. There was no phasing Williamson. There was no phasing Barrett. This was just like another game. And it was amazing. Because, Seth, you and I, we were in the Bahamas. Kentucky's a really good team.
Really good.
Really good.
They weren't a team, though. You know, here's my thing. The one thing that you talk about, you know, adversity visits the strong and lives with the weak.
Wow.
I thought in that game they were so out of their character, Kentucky,
yeah.
Because
why?
when they got punched, I don't know if it was a stage. I don't know if it was the first time they actually got pushed back and they looked in the mirror and they saw, like, these are really dudes. I don't know if they were overhyped. But, like, here's the thing. Game starts. Duke's making threes. Kentucky, instead of pounding that thing to Reed Travis and making them guard and making Zion guard, they're settling like they think it's a three-point shooting contest. All right, they never kind of – remember how the ball moved in the Bahamas?
Yes, yes.
Now, Duke had a lot to do with it because of their ability to disrupt and their length and their ability to pressure the ball. But when things went a little bit south, I thought that the Kentucky kids, instead of bowing their necks and fighting back, they all tried to do it on their own. And then there were some things that surprised me in terms of what John did. I mean, like, I would have started, all right, Nick Richards, just had nothing to do with his game. It had more to do with, all right, they're going to start Marquise Bolden. I got a matchup for him, and he's come so long, I'm going to empower him. That's just me. You know, again, he's with him every day in practice because I hate to make these, you know, assumptions, but that's just me, just from the days we were in the Bahamas. You know, I would have played right through Reed Travis and gone right at Zion Williamson early in the game. That's just, you know, the one guy that's different than anyone else was Zion Williamson. Like everyone else, we could have at least survived. And then I just thought that they all wanted it. Maybe they wanted a help so bad that their shot selection wasn't good. In the games we did in the Bahamas, can you remember more than two or three shots that
no.
you said that?
No.
How many did you see the other night?
No, well, they couldn't. They couldn't get a good one. I mean, it was more bad than good for a while. And I'm not saying – I guess bad is the wrong way to put it. I would say more rushed and uncomfortable than
100%.
Bad. Yeah. I mean, and that's what you try to do. Look, people think – there's no shutouts in basketball, right? I mean, you don't pitch a shutout. You don't play defense like the 85 Bears and nobody can get a first down. Guys are going to score. But the key, what you want to do is you want to make the other team uncomfortable. You want to make them hesitant. You want to make an open shot feel weird. And Duke did that, and you said it before the game. You know, Mike wants to get into contesting, get into the ball, pressure the ball, keep the ball on the side. All the old style Bob Knight stuff, going back really to his days at Army. I mean, that's the stuff that we practiced every freaking day at Indiana. And Mike was doing that with Duke. And it was refreshing to me to see young guys, Seth, young guys, number one, understand how to do it. And number two, not only do it, but smell blood in the water and turn it up a notch. I thought that was cool. I thought that was coaching. That was culture. That was these kids being just guys that understand and get basketball. You know, I mean, it was fun, really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's your opinion, like all the international basketball these kids play, on the different stages they play. If you think about, you know, R.J. Barrett and the success he had with the Canadian national team, you think about, you know, the Zion Williamson tour of where he's played, you know, basically Trey Jones being the brother of a guy who's won a national championship at Duke, who has some even greater ownership. Do you think that helps guys get it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I do. I was reading an article about Zion Williamson, and this was, you know, a little bit like when guys were trying to run around looking, recruiting LeBron. You know, you go to his AAU game, you can't get in unless you get there an hour before because it's so – everything these guys do has been big time, right? I mean, they're not playing in gyms with six people. And
no.
But to me, with all that hype, it can go the other way too. And we've seen it go the other way with guys. We've seen guys become petulant. We've seen guys become uncoachable. But man, look, and then Seth, Kentucky, to add to the coaching element of it, Kentucky goes zone. What does Duke do? Whip it around, get the ball in the middle, look shot, look down, look opposite, handle the zone. That's coaching, but that's being calm in the moment in big environments. And to your point, I think 1,000% all of that adds up for those guys to be able to play in whatever environment gets thrown. I got to believe it's hard. It was hard for me going to Indiana at first practice, right?
I mean, my goodness.
You know, that's not the easiest thing in the world. So, you know, kudos to them, man. That was the show of shows. It really was.
And I'll tell you what, you want to zone those dudes? The way they move Zion and RJ Barrett with teeth of that defense, and they can, like, distribute it, drive it, move it. Like, I thought Trey Jones was absolutely – I'm going to call Trey Jones, Trey Young all season.
And you're going to call him Tyus. And apparently you're going to call him Tyus a lot.
Yeah, I do, yeah. His ability at the top of the thing, ball fake, shot fake, get it to the middle, be patient. And then the guys that they – just the simplicity of what they were doing – was really impressive. They're impressive.
Yeah, the one thing that you know, the one thing I would say about Zion Williamson is you're going to have to, you know, he hits his first three, right? And now you're like, all right, wait a second here. But I think you got to live with that moving forward. You know, you got to play him to where you keep him in front. If he wants to jump up like he did in the middle of the lane, then fine. Jump up like you did in the middle of the lane. But you can't let him get that big body on an angle, because that big body, man.
Oh, my goodness.
You get on an angle with him. Like when they let him go right, they took away his left, let him go right. All right, now next game, whoever they're playing, Army or whatever, is going to know, all right, we got to square up on him and just keep him in front. And so much easier said than done, but man, fun. Can't wait
and
for that.
And the obituaries is so premature for Kentucky. Of they're going to be fine. You know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, this is a two-part thing for Kentucky right now. You've got to be truthful, and you know, the film don't lie. So I mean, you got to be truthful. But then, and you've got to be demanding, and your non-negotiables, the things that, you know, us not trusting each other, us not sharing the basketball, us being selfish, us not busting our tail to get ahead of the ball in transition, not closing out the way, that's fine. Then you're going to also have to build your team back up. And then I think the biggest challenge for Kentucky, and I really believe this, they've got 9 like pieces. And you know what? They need 3 guys to separate themselves, right? Because you have 9 like pieces and things go a little bit south. You can say, well, hey, you know, he's not playing that good. Why aren't I playing? Or he's not, you know, why is he starting? And, you know, he missed 3 in a row. You know, coach is not on him as hard as he's on me when I miss a couple. And all of a sudden a team that has likes each other can separate. So I really believe that they've got to have about 3 core guys separate themselves, still play 9, but it's not a democracy. You know, the 3 core guys are going to play 30 plus minutes a game, right? The other 2 guys, so that's going to leave 10 on each of those positions. And then the other 2 guys, then you might play those guys 20 and 20, but you're not keeping 9 happy for a long season unless you're blowing people out.
Yeah, maybe he goes to 2 shifts again.
Ooh.
You play this, we play that.
I guess right now I just got a headache when you say
reports of their demise are greatly exaggerated.
Yeah,
I mean,
greatly, you know, exaggerated.
Greatly exaggerated.
The guy's a Hall of Fame coach. Look, he'll get the kids right.
You know, you always go back to your own experiences. We went to the Final Four in 92, first game of the year. We get absolutely, I mean, not killed, destroyed in the tip-off Hall of Fame Classic by UCLA with Don McLean and those guys. Tracy Murray came back and beat them by 35 in the game to go to the Final Four. So month from now, you forget about it and let's go.
Yeah, I hear. Then, you know, there's other game played in Indianapolis as well. #1 Kansas, Michigan State. And, you know, Kansas, a different Kansas team. Obviously, there's a lot going on with Kansas basketball. When it comes to basketball played on the court, they're kind of an interesting makeup because you got transfers, you've got elite freshmen, you've got a mountain masquerading as a man in Udoka Azubuike. What was your take? Let's just to Kansas in general. Forget about Michigan State. What was your take on Kansas?
I really like the freshman guards. Like, I love Quentin Grimes, Seth. I mean, look, he made buckets and then acted like he was supposed to make buckets. I also, you know, Lawson really good. I mean, look, he did what you needed. I mean, he scored it, he rebounded, he assisted it, he's long. You know, he looks like a pro. I thought they were really good until I saw Duke. I mean, if you want to know the truth, you want to know the truth. But hey, Kansas, if we saw Kansas in the Final Four, nobody's going to be surprised. But man, I was so, I don't know, were you surprised by Quentin Grimes, or did you kind of know this is who that kid was?
You know, I spent time with Grimes the summer before in Italy and in Houston at a camp, and he's a grown man.
Yeah.
His maturity, yes. His poise, the way he carries himself. He just jumped up that first 3, he just caught it, bam, jumped up, bam, ran back, let's go. There was no fist pump, there was no facial change. It was the next play. It was like he was a grizzled veteran. And that's kind of who he is. He has a maturity about him, a poise about him, for surely a toughness about him. He's got a grown man's body. There's no doubt about it. I thought he was terrific. I expect him to be good. He was even better than that on that stage. Lawson was interesting because he doesn't have the pop athletically.
Yes.
But man, he's a good basketball player. Like that, they ran one little big-to-big ball screen right in the middle, and he came off that ball screen through that little high-low pass. That was a high-level pass to Udoka Azubuike for a layup. Like, there are not a lot of dudes that can throw that pass. His passing blew me away. His floor game was good. He rebounded it by putting a body on people. They're a good team. They've got depth. They've got size. They come at you in speed. I thought Duke's players were terrific and played well and were well coached. Kansas's ball movement, I thought, was really good.
And again, you know, Dotson's a young kid out there with Grimes, and I agree. I thought they were well coached. Bill Self lost 50 pounds. How about that? Apparently had a hernia, and good for him. Hey, I think Michigan State's going to be just fine. Just fine, Seth.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. I think Aaron Henry's going to have to have a bigger role.
Yeah, what happened? We were all hepped up, and Iz was hepped up. What happened to him in that game?
Yeah, you know, he had 4 points. He did some things. He had a backdoor that got blocked. I'm not sure how many minutes he played. Here's my thing. Look, you know the speed. The first 7 seconds of the clock, they're great. I mean, that thing flies up the floor. They're running their sets. They run them hard. They screen hard. They read. They space. I thought Goins and Xavier Tillman kind of stretched the floor at their size. You know, look, they're going to win. Cassius Winston can't turn it over 5 times. Mm-hmm. If they're going to win, Nick Ward's got to be better than he was.
He was bad. Do I need to?
No, I wasn't. He was going to be the America's most improved player, and he still might be. We're not throwing him under the bus after one game. I wasn't going to go there.
Okay,
I was only in a text to you that I was going there so I could get a cheap chuckle out of myself while I was flying on the plane.
Right.
The one thing is, you know, do they have anyone that could just create separation? I think Aaron Henry can do it. I think that Cassius can do it to some extent. But they're going to be fine. I mean, they're going to guard. They're going to rebound. They're going to play fast early in the clock. They're going to move the ball. They're unselfish. Now, like, even though they didn't win, I thought that they had the toughness to get back in the game and make it interesting. And think about how many bad plays they made. And their bench and their togetherness is undeniable. Like through it all, those kids, they are all into each other. As just watching their bench and watching their team, there's no me in that group. At least that's how I saw. Except for Nick not playing well.
Hey, those four teams end up in the Final Four. Would that surprise you?
Yeah, I can't. It would surprise me.
Could you not see?
I Michigan State. I'm not sure. I got my sleeper pick. Kansas State is my Final Four team.
Wow,
Kansas State. I like him.
You like that Dean kid? You think he's?
I like Dean Wade. I like Dean Wade, Brown. Yeah. I like how tough they are. They returned 5 starters.
Let me ask you a question real quick.
And I think Bruce can really coach.
How's it gone for Kansas State and how's it gone for Illinois since they got Bruce out of there? That gone ain't good?
It's a valid point.
Be careful. I tell my kids this. Be careful what you wish for. Right? No?
Bruce Weber just flat. Look, he's a ball coach.
Yes.
That's the thing. He does a lot like Chris Beard.
Mm-hmm. You
know, not a zillion 5-star guys. They play hard. They compete. They share it. They develop players. The Octagon of Doom is a great home court. Like, I look, Kansas is great. I'm going to think about this because I know, I might just again have to go to the field. I know you think I'm criminally insane. But
well,
I'm high on the Wildcats.
At some point, you got to be right betting against Kansas to win the Big 12, don't you?
I mean, here's the thing.
It's been a decade and a half, but all right.
If it's a tie, I win.
Why are you the house?
It's like blackjack, right?
Tie, you don't win.
Oh, that's right. It's a push.
Tie's a push, big boy.
Yeah, that's really stinks.
I don't disagree, but until further notice.
Yeah, no, I hear you. The Big 12, there's no doubt. Look, But the coaches in that league make a great point in that the one thing about Kansas is they've got the best home court in the league.
The players that play on that home court are pretty good.
And there's an expectation.
Well, but you know, in the Big 12, you don't talk about Oklahoma State anymore. You know, I mean, Oklahoma State Final Four is pretty good. All you know, you just don't really you don't really talk about them anymore. They one of the great. What made me think of that was the great home court. You know, they did you know, redid IBA and all that stuff. But man, you just Kansas State and the job Bruce Pearl has done.
Bruce Weber,
has done. You could put up there with any job in the country.
Oh, no doubt.
In terms of what he's fighting against, you know, in his own state, who he is available, who is available for him to recruit to, you could put him up against anybody in terms of doing a great job in college basketball, I think.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of purple ties. This guy's got a lot of purple ties. It's unbelievable.
You used to have an ugly orange coat. Now it's a purple tie.
Yeah, man, he's got a lot of purple ties. But, yeah, I think the Big 12 is a conference. You know, last few years, will Oklahoma be better? Trey Young.
Yes or no?
That'll be interesting. I think yes.
Me too.
I think yes. I think you know they'll be different. They won't be as much fun to watch, but I think they'll get back to checking people. I think they'll get back to sharing the ball. They'll do it more by committee. They'll be more consistent when they get in the league play. Is my get. I think Iowa State's going to be better. I think that guy Steve Prohm can really really coach. Mm. Really good offensive coach.
Yeah, I do too. And all right, Texas Tech. Now, Texas Tech kind of came, I don't know if it's out of nowhere, but.
They're not going anywhere.
I agree.
Texas Tech's not going anywhere. And you know what? When we come back, we're going to have Shaka Smart of Texas, and they're going to be really good. And we're going to have Chris Beard. How about that? Doesn't get any better. We'll be back with Coach Smart. But first, let's have a word from our good friends at ZipRecruiter. Hey, Dan.
Yo.
You know what's not smart? I'll tell you what's not smart. Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of wrong resume, not smart.
You know what is smart, other than Shaka? ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. Unlike other job sites, Seth, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find out. ZipRecruiter finds them for you, Seth.
Its powerful matching technology scans through thousands of resumes. Remember when you were a head coach and you had thousands of assistant coaching resumes?
Yes.
Identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast.
Oh, Seth, no more sifting through the wrong resumes, wasting time. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is rated like this podcast number one by employers in the United States. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews, Seth.
And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/courtside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/courtside.
Courtside! ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I'd like to welcome in Texas head coach Shaka Smart, who's going to lead his team in the Armed Forces Classic against Arkansas on Friday on ESPN. I will actually be here with my man Jay Will, Dave Fleming on the call. Shaka, what does it mean to you personally to play in the Armed Forces Classic and everything this game stands for on this special day?
It's a great opportunity for our whole program, everyone that's associated with it, players, coaches, administrators, just a chance to be around the servicemen and women for these couple days, a chance to represent the University of Texas at a place where obviously there's much, much bigger things going on than sports or basketball. And then, you know, for our guys at such a young age, a real shot at perspective and an opportunity to see some other areas of life that maybe they don't think so much about in their little corner of the world.
Shaka, you guys got some perspective with Andrew Jones and the diagnosis of leukemia. How is he doing? I know he got in the game, big ovation. Take us through him and his journey with you, your team, and everything involved with him.
He's doing well, Coach. He's making strides. He's had a phenomenal attitude about the whole process of working his way back. He's not all the way back to full strength, obviously. I mean, he really finished up several months of treatment at the end of August, and literally the next month started school and started in on some workouts with us. So it's been a work in progress. You know, he was such a high-level player before he went down that You know, his expectation is to get back to that point for you know, in his own mind, he really wants to do that. On our side of things, you know, we're just so happy that he's doing well and he's in school and he's on the court. And, you know, we're just excited about him working his way back to full strength.
And it's an amazing story. You know, to me, and again, that's, I'm an outsider looking in. I tweeted this out after your game. Someone cut a clip of your game the other day. That was the best play of the day, and that was the best win of the year. You know, just him being out there celebrating life. Because, you know, let's face it, 10 months ago, just the thought of him being out there probably was, you know, far beyond maybe anyone's, well, it was everyone's hope, but it wasn't any, maybe anyone's reality. So for him to be out there, I just thought it was fabulous. But now you got to play games. You got to put a team on the court to help you win. I look at your team, Shaka. Am I on it or off it? Right now, your backcourt looks more like a Big 12 winning backcourt than maybe since you've been there. Is that somewhere in the vicinity?
We had a really good backcourt my first year here. We had a lot of older guys. Unfortunately, we lost them all after that first year. But you're right, Coach. It's one of the backcourts that you know, we feel can be one of the better tandems in the Big 12. But at the same time, we got to go make it happen. Matt Coleman was our starting point guard last year as a freshman. Started every game. Went through the, you know, ups and downs and the twists and turns of playing against the Trey Youngs and Javon Carters and Devontae Grahams in our league. But I think he's much, much better for it. He's sturdier. He's shooting the ball better. And then Kerwin Roach, as a senior, I think has an opportunity to have a phenomenal year if he can keep getting better.
Hey, Coach, how you mentioned, you know, guys leaving. You've had guys go. Mobamba last year, the Allen kid, the backup, or the guards you mentioned. Different from VCU where you established havoc in a way you go. How's that been? How are you? How comfortable are you now as you've gone along your career here at Texas?
Well, one of the things that it affects, as you guys know, is your ability to build and sustain culture, because obviously your best players are your biggest culture drivers. And, you know, if those guys are only around for a year, then, you know, that you obviously have to make strides with everyone else and kind of put someone else in that slot. Obviously recruiting, you have to do a really good job making sure talent-wise you have a replacement there. And that's not always one guy replacing one guy. Sometimes you do it by committee, but we feel good about this year's team having a little bit more experience than we've had the last couple of years. And we don't have a freshman big that is necessarily our best player like we did the last 2 years. That presents some challenges. I'm not saying I wouldn't take a Mo Bamba or Jared Allen again. I certainly would. But when your best player is a really, really young kid just getting started in college basketball, no matter how talented he is, there's a learning curve, and there's certain things that he doesn't yet understand, particularly in the first couple of months of the season.
Yeah, you do have some interesting picks, but you know, you've got a guy, Dylan Osakowski, who now he's a fifth-year senior, you know, obviously transfer, played last year, but he's transformed himself. Forget about the do and cutting off the hair, but the dude's lost like 30 pounds, and you know, I watched tape of your game the other night. I mean, he looks totally different. What is it like to have a guy like that back, who kind of is in it with you? You know, you spent so much time with him the year he sat out, kind of creating a special relationship with him. But see him transform his body and make that commitment to try to get that much better.
He's done a terrific job with his body. It's interesting because most of these guys, as you guys know, at the college level, you're trying to get him to eat as much as possible and gain as much weight as possible. But he's on a different plan. And for him, he's done a phenomenal job being very selective with his diet and his nutrition. He's done a great job getting extra cardio work in with our strength and conditioning coaches. And then on the court, he's really been diligent about different aspects of his game. So I really hope that this year can be a great one for him because he's earned it, he's worked hard for it, and he really, really wants to make a special year.
Hey, Seth, you don't know this, but Shaka had a player catch a touchdown last Colts game. Mo Ali Cox went up and made it.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
What
a catch.
Yeah.
Coach. What a catch.
That was a sick catch. Hey. Now I got a question.
Well, let me tell you guys, when he first came in, he had the lowest motor, and we put him on this plan where he had to run what was called the parking deck mile. It was running up and down a parking deck and then down to the end of the street and back. It was about a mile. And he at first was running over 8 minutes. His motor was really, really bad. And the work that that kid put in and changing his motor and changing the way that he approached the game was phenomenal. So this couldn't happen to a better guy.
Hey, let me just follow up. Did he talk to you about going to try to play football, or how did it all come about? You have any idea?
Well, here's what happened. And if you ever – you should have him on your show, Coach, because he's a great basketball guy to talk to. And obviously he's having some success in football. But this is the type of kid he is. He's such a go-with-the-flow guy that when he was a sophomore in high school, he was kind of in a tough home life situation. And his AAU coach recommended that he transfer to a private school to get away. And so he did that. The only problem was that private school didn't have a football team. So he did not play football his junior year and his senior year, and this is after being a high major recruit as a young kid in high school. Obviously, he came to VCU. He was at VCU for 5 years. So that's 5 years plus 2 years in high school not playing football. But all along, we always said, hey, man, you got a chance to play in the NFL if you continue building your body and continue improving your motor. And there's a friend of ours that is a NFL scout. He's scouted for a bunch of different teams, the Eagles, the Jets, and he's from Richmond. And so when he would come back over the holidays, he would come by practice. And he always would say, when he looked at Mo, he'd say, that's how they look. That's exactly what they look like.
Yeah.
Hey, that's the thing, man. I mean, you had Jimmy Graham. He ended up making that transition. And I'll tell you, Mo Cox is a great story. But that dude played for you. That dude played hard at basketball. I mean, he rebounded.
He was a really, really valuable player.
Yeah, that dude would. Mo Alcox could play for you right now and make you better. I mean,
absolutely.
Just his presence. Arkansas playing early in the season, different type of team to play. And obviously, they're so unpredictable in their pressure. Now, back in the day, people would have said this would have been havoc versus the fastest 40 minutes. You're extending your defense a little bit more, but not to the point kind of where you did, back at VCU, right?
We are. We pressed a lot the other night in our opener. I think it'll be situational depending on our team, foul trouble. We're not to the point yet where we have the level of discipline when the other team's in the bonus that it makes sense to press every single time. But our guys did a good job with it the other night. Certainly with Arkansas, it's going to be an exciting up-tempo game, and we're going to have to do a good job making good decisions as the game gets going faster.
I got a question on that. Is it harder with the new rules to do the things you want to do? Like back in the day, the press, you could, in the backcourt especially, you could bump a little bit. You could put a little different type of pressure. Was it easier to extend your defensive press back in the day where officials were a little more lenient with physicality in the backcourt?
Well, I think the officials feel a level of pressure to call some of those fouls. And doesn't mean you can't press. I mean, look at what West Virginia's done.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that certainly in trapping situations and in close one-on-one situations where you're really getting after the ball, there is more of a focus on calling some of those fouls. The cylinder rule definitely does affect traps. It's interesting if you watch traps, a lot of times guys travel, but they call the foul first.
Right.
And so that's a big shift. That's either a turnover with the travel or maybe going to the line shooting a one-on-one if they call the foul.
It's funny. It's almost like – you should be able to do that as a ref, but it's really hard if you, like you said, if you watch traps, and I was watching a bunch before I did a Cincinnati game last night, people travel constantly. Like, are you on referees whenever you try? Hey, watch your feet during the course of a game?
Well, it's interesting because that's been the case for a long, long time, and that was a big beef of ours at VCU because we obviously wanted to create as many turnovers as we could. But for whatever reason, when there's a lot of people in a small area, you know, there's a ball handler and there's two trappers, it's really, really tough to see the feet. And so, you know, I heard on the officiating video this year, they said they want the officials to ref from the ground, from the floor up. So we'll see if that actually happens.
It'll happen for a month.
And then, exactly.
And then it goes away.
You're unbelievable. Shock. I know you got an event to go to today, but I'm excited to, you know, see you practice today, and we really do appreciate you coming on. And this will be a heck of a game on ESPN Radio and also on ESPN. And like, I think you put it great because this puts things in perspective for all of us. You know, the people that are here calling the game, but for your players, administration staff, and anyone watching these young people do what they do on a daily basis to enable us to live the lives we live. I said it last year when we were in Germany. It's probably the most moving basketball experience I've ever had because it puts everything in perspective.
Well, we're really looking forward to it. And I want to say thank you guys going into the season to both of you guys as coaches because you put the game in perspective that maybe is a little bit different than the majority of the media. So I don't know if you guys hear that enough, but it needs to be said.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Shock.
Thanks, pal.
Thanks, guys.
I'd like to welcome in Texas Tech head coach Chris Beard, who's done an absolutely incredible job coming off a magical season, but obviously building towards showing the consistency he wants to at Texas Tech. Coach Beard, how is life? We're getting you off the court from individual workouts. Doc, it's an individual workout to Dockage's whether he decides to grab one more donut or not.
You're darn right. You're darn right. Hey.
We've got some of that going on in our program too, Coach.
Hey, Coach, you guys came right out and blitzed my friend Carson Cunningham's team. You held them to 37 the other night. Now, 37 obviously is a great number. Is the strength of your team defensively right now?
You know, our team is a team in works. We're progress in work. But I think so. I think definitely as the season goes on, one of our big identities could be our defense. We have some length and athleticism. We have some experience. You know, the other night, Incarnate Word gave us all we could handle in the first half. It's kind of a tale of two halves. I've been on both sides of those games. But I do think we have what appears to be the makings of a good defensive team.
Seth, they held Incarnate Word to 7 in the second half. 48-7 was
the second. Oh, it's good to hold the single. Single digits usually win you a game. There's no doubt about it.
Man.
You guys, you know, last year was an amazing year, but, you know, like, you knew what you were going to get from Keenan, but Zaire Smith, I mean, all of a sudden, he blows up. He's out. He's a first-round draft choice. You know, you think you're going to have, you know, you have a one-and-done, which is good and bad. It's great for him. It's great for the program, but obviously, you know, when you expect a guy back, you need continuity. But you have a good backcourt coming back, and you recruited a transfer in Matt Mooney that has the chance to at least fill some of the void. When you look at your backcourt right now with Jarrett Culver and Matt and Francis, what do you see?
Yeah, I like our guards, Coach. We you know, we make the run last year to the Elite Eight, and we really return, you know, two of our three guards that played most last year. I mean, Moretti was our backup last year, played big minutes in March Madness, and he's back. He started the other night at the point. And then Jarrett Culver, I think, has a chance to be one of the best players in the Big 12. So even though we lost a lot, you know, we did return two starters, Culver and Norrence, and then, you know, really our sixth and seventh man, Morrow and Brandon Francis, have both returned. So we do have a lot of new faces, but I think we have enough returners where we can get off to a good start this month.
Coach, in a broader sense, you know, Texas Tech, you think football, you know, the whole Texas football thing, but a run to the Elite Eight, and does that change the perception of the program outside, externally?
I think so, Coach, in some ways. I mean, more than anything, what it does is just validate. When we got to Tech a couple years ago, we had a vision. We had a day-to-day process, a plan. You know, we asked players to do things they'd never done before. We asked our fan base to do things that they have done before, but asked them to be more consistent. Administration's been great here. We've asked for a lot, really haven't been told no. So to have some success kind of validates, you know, everything that we do. And as we build the program, I think we'll always look back on last year's team and have a big sense of appreciation. You know, we had over 10,000 people here the other night for season opener, and that's hard to do anywhere in the country, not alone Texas, when football season's going on. Our Tech football team's good this year. We're right in the middle of the mix. I think we got another NFL quarterback and got a good defense. So just so appreciative that, you know, 10,000 people came out on opening night. That's got to be one of the best home crowds in the Big 12. You know, Kansas does what they do, but the rest of us, I'd put our crowd right up there with anybody.
I'll tell you, we were up there for game day, Dan. The ownership of the community to me, and that's a testament to you, Coach, the ownership of the community and how you've been able to connect with them in the student body was as good as any place that we've been in the years that I've been doing this stuff. And, you know, I've been at, quote-unquote, a football school when I was at Tech, and your ability to recruit guys that play a style of basketball, do you think it's the style that you play people can relate to in Lubbock, and your alums can relate to? You think that's been a big part of it?
Yeah, I really do. I think when I was a younger coach, I never really understood that, how, you know, I thought just winning basketball is winning basketball. But I think there's a validity, there's a truth to, you know, a community, a part of the state, a kind of people identifying with a team. And obviously, you know, in football, I grew up a Cowboy fan, but being a Cowboy fan, you knew so much about, like, the Pittsburgh Steelers, for example, and how they played hard, you know, good, basic, fundamental, just tough football, kind of identified with the people of Pittsburgh. And I think there's a similarity here. I mean, West Texas is a place where, you know, people go to work every day. And when you tell somebody you're going to do something, you keep your word. A lot of handshakes out here that mean something. It's just, it's a different way of life. Really good people. It's why, top of my list of why I love coaching. I would like to think our team resembles that. You know, we've got a lot of guys. We might not have a bunch of national guys' names, but we've got guys that play together. We've got guys that get better. We've got guys that try to play the game the right way.
Coach, let me ask you, you know, college basketball started the other day, and the focus is on the big names, right? I mean, you know, the focus is on Williamson and Reddish and Barrett and all that kind of stuff. How much do you, as a coach that has gotten right to where Duke did that, right, all right to all these programs, how much do you play or pound into your kids, you know, we're not what these guys are supposed to be, but we're as good as what these, the kind of the chip on the shoulder kind of a thing. Do you do that? Is that a part of what you try to get across to your team?
Absolutely. I mean, we got some core values in our program, like everybody does. Top of that list is just truth tellers. You know, we tell our guys all the time, we just take a lot of pride in telling it like it is. And, you know, we want to be the best version of us. We scrimmage. One of our closed-door scrimmages was against Houston the other day. And I, you know, I have great respect for Coach Sampson and what he's done in basketball. And his teams have always kind of played hard, you know, kind of blue-collar like we try to. And after that scrimmage, I actually asked Coach Sampson if he would talk to our team. And he came in our locker room, which, you know, locker room's a sacred place. I don't let anybody in our locker room without respect or like. And I respect Coach Sampson. So he comes in, and he basically said that exact word, Coach, and we have it up in our locker room right now. But he said, hey, guys, no offense, you're Texas Tech. You're not Kentucky. You're not Kansas. That's okay. You can still beat those type people, but you got to know who you are. And he said, don't ever lose your chip. And he's talking about the chip on the shoulder. And I've actually got that typed up in my office, just sticking on my wall with a piece of masking tape. But yeah, we try to, we know who we are, and every day we just try to be the best version of us.
That's a great thing. Who are you and how do you win? I mean, I think those two questions every team has got to identify and embrace Like, if I walked in your gym and asked Jared Culver, right, who are you and how do you win? What would he say? What's the first thing he'd say?
Well, I think Culver would tell you, number one, we're a defensive program. We know we have to guard. Last year, among many things and many objectives, we told the guys, hey, we've got to be the best defensive team in the Big 12 to compete. And I think in a lot of ways we were. We're also a team, you know, that just believes in development, improving. First thing I told the guys after last year's run was, hey, we got to get better players next year. And they always kind of look at you. And I said, no, it can be the same people, but we need a better Jared Culver. We need a better Brandon Francis. And so we're always talking about improving every single day. A lot of people kind of put it on a T-shirt or a wristband, but it's something we really believe. So today our objective is to get a little bit better than we did yesterday.
That's a great approach.
To that point, can you read a little bit of that in recruiting a kid?
Oh, absolutely. I think from even in the month of July, one of the things we always talk about is when we come off the road that first week is, hey, this is what we kind of saw. And then when we come back off that second week, we're always talking about who's improved, who looked better this weekend than they did last weekend. So and we talk about that all the time. I tell the guys, you know, we've got 13 active players today, and we'll start practice this afternoon saying, hey, if everybody can just get 1% better, that might be a little bit more effort, being a little bit more coachable, being a little bit more disciplined. But if everybody can just get 1% better, then our team gets 13% better. So, you know, I'm no math major. I'm a 2.5 guy, but I know if everybody gets a little bit better, our team gets better.
2 points up on me. 2-3 guy there.
Wait, hey, Doc, did you actually graduate from Indiana? I mean, come on.
Yeah, but Indiana, they gave away degrees. Like, you know, they just like drive down the street.
I know you went to class.
I know I did. I did do that with the man. The man make you go to class, brother.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you, when you go to a Texas Tech practice, it's an experience. So, truthfully, the way your kids embrace practice and embrace coaching, it's not like that everywhere. And like you talk about that 1% for everyone. Obviously, it's not a choice. It's demanded. It's expected. It's everyone's accountable for it. But your practices, that's the one thing about now that we're not coaching is we get a chance to see everyone practice. I could sit and watch your guys practice every day, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. It means a lot to me. We have a lot of fun too. I think, along the way, I know this, when the players come back, like we've had Keenan Evans and Zach Smith, Zaire even came back this summer for a couple of days. And, you know, we all hear the thing, the guys wish they had one more game and all that, but really what they all wish is they had one more practice, you know, one more time to get out there and compete and have fun. And, you know, it's one thing, like Keenan told me the other day, it's just kind of different at that NBA level, you know, and he even kind of misses in a competitive way, you know, coaches getting on you like we do in college. So we do enjoy practice every day. It's sacred to us. We tell the guys all the time, you only get a certain number of these. Like, you know, they give you 30 practices, but it really isn't that to get ready because you got the two scrimmages. You got the 2 days before the scrimmages, which are always light, and you got the 1 day before the season starts. So when you really look at it, you got about 23 practices to start the season. And this time of year, you know, you might get 7 or 8 practices a month, depending on how your schedule's laid out. So when we do have a chance to get to work, it's something we all enjoy.
Continued success, Coach. Good luck.
Chris, thanks so much, bud.
You never notice how fast guys like getting off the phone with us?
No, usually they love us. I mean, come on now. I mean, that's a great dude there.
I know it. Football coaches always hit you with whatever, you know, go Eagles, go Bears. In Indiana, they got a football coach whose thing is Leo, love each other. So whenever you do an interview, they're like, Leo. Oh, okay. All right.
How about the guy Muschamp the other day? He said he didn't know it was election day. Why do football coaches think they have to let everyone know how hard they're working? Seriously.
Or how dumb they are.
I mean, they sleep in the office and they, oh, I didn't know it was election day.
Did you ever sleep in the office?
Why? No, hell no. Why would I want to sleep in the office?
That's stupid.
I'm sorry.
That is stupid. It was stupid.
That is really stupid. I got to call. Why wouldn't you just drive home 10 minutes? You always live close to where you work. Drive home 10 minutes, get in your bed, get a good night's sleep so you, you know, the next morning you don't wake up an angry Dan Dockage.
I can tell you, and we can get into this at some point, but I had legitimate depression. I mean, legitimate, not. No. You're going to say, yeah, I lost. No. There's a difference between that and legitimate. And I had, when people talk about depression, I totally understand it. Not that we lost and I'm upset and I'm going to be upset for days, but I could literally not get my head off of a pillow. That's more than just a, I understand we all lose. I'm talking about legitimate depression. Slept on the floor or slept on a couch because, and in the minute I got out of coaching, no more depression.
No more depression.
No more depression.
Life is good. Life is good. Multiple podcasts, no depression, undefeated. Life is good.
We're undefeated right now, aren't we?
Oh, going into year 7. It's a long time. It's a lot of wins. Hey, by the way, we like to thank obviously Coach Beard and Coach Shaka Smart for coming on and hanging out with us. By the way, Shaka Smart, great observation at the end of the interview. There's no doubt about it. And you know what? If you like what we're saying, and you like what you're hearing, please download us on Apple Podcast or wherever you download your podcast. Make sure you also take the time to listen to Dan's podcast because there's nothing better than the Lee Ross Dan Dockage podcast. Solves all the world's problems.
Family problems.
Do that. And, the one question I have to ask before we go, and I know Gabe's getting upset because I'm pontificating, is Junior, 1-0, what was it like seeing your son on the bench?
I always marvel at he's a good-looking kid, and I always see myself.
What happened?
I don't know. your daughters are beautiful, and I'm like.
What happened?
I know what happened. Mothers are a great thing, but you know what's cool? It was cool to see him so into it because, hey, Seth, you went through this, man, right? I mean, it's a tough time. We could do a whole show on players the year after they're done playing. And they're not going to go to the NBA. There is a lostness to you, right? I mean, you don't know
second life.
Yeah, you don't know where you fit. Particularly when you're at the college campus that you play. You don't really can't hang with the players. You're not really a coach. It's a tough thing, and you're not on a team for the first time. I don't know. I started playing basketball on a team when I was 7 years old. Andrew started when he was 7, and then all of a sudden you're not on a team. You know what the heck? It's tough.
He's a good dude. You should be proud of him. He's a good dude. And we thank you for listening, and we look forward next week. We're going to go back to our regular schedule. Hopefully we're going to knock it out on Wednesday. Is that correct, Gabe?
That's correct.
If people don't like it, can they still listen?
Here's the deal. How can you not like it? It's the world's greatest podcast. Just download us wherever you download your podcast. Give us a great rating because you know what? It will show your intelligence.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.